Okay, Jonah Wilson is here too, in case there is some questions. So for the record, we have Representative Moses has joined us, Representative Holm, and Representative Jewell. Okay, I see, looks like zero fiscal notes, that's good. Representative Parker, do you have a question?
Just a question. We're looking really at an encroachment issue here, and then there's this exemption for schools in it. Is there any relation to this and say, highway right, this is airport right away, but anything common to some of the major problems that we don't seem to be able to get resolved on highway right away issues?
Chair, Representative Parker, this in no way requires any school to return any of the land that they're on now. Just for in the future, it establishes that a school can't claim title within the border restriction line of an airport, and that's simply to protect the integrity of the safety of the runway and the airport, and would avoid legal problems that we've had in the past. One example was Yukon Koyukuk at the Bettles Airport, and we just had to go ask the Attorney General's office for an opinion that basically said that this legislation in no way intends to force the state to compromise its federal funding and the promises made to the feds for federal funding. This doesn't, are you speaking about the encroachment bill that is currently in the House on
Stoltz? Why would we want to give up our, I'm not quite sure, why would we want to give up our ability to support schools as a real priority?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, we're not challenging the school boards on this, and we're not asking them to leave. What we're doing is saying you can build at the airports, but build away from the building restriction line, away so that you're not encroaching on the actual airport property. And a lot of our rural airports, airport land is some of the best land there is, and so a lot of buildings, and especially schools, are abut the runway, and what we're simply saying is that you can stay there if you're there already, but we can't give you title to the land. That's all it is.
It still seems to be a real inconsistency with the way we're treating schools here and the way we're treating churches on other state land, but that's troublesome here. I'm going to stick through this a little bit.
Sure.
Representative Jewell?
In this legislation, there's no appeal process for a school district if they were to appeal that, and I can't imagine a case, but I suppose there could be, DOT may just want more land for parking their equipment or whatever it might be, and if it isn't real clear and there gets to be a dispute, there's no place that the school districts can go, and would you be adverse to something that would allow for an appeal process? Because I'm not sure if it's people's packets. I've got an amendment to deal with that.
Maybe Pam Lewis, who's online with leasing, could speak to that.
Is she online?
I would simply answer that question, Representative Jewell, through the chair, that on previous testimony, Kip Knudsen has testified that in every situation, DOT would certainly work with the school board if it's within reasonability, and that's what we want to do. We're not trying to hinder any schools. What we're just trying to do is we've made a guarantee to the FAA for funding and for safety reasons that we won't approach too far into the airport property. Some of that land is reserved for runway extensions. Some of it is literally at the end of a runway. So this would simply clear it up so that, if we have 50 acres and you request 15 and we can only give you 10, we'll give you that 10. But where it encroaches on the airport and endangers our funding or the integrity of the airport and the runway, we'll work with you to help you find land somewhere else. That's also something we've said is if we can't get you something at the airport, we'll try and find you an ideal piece of property somewhere else.
But, don't misunderstand. I support this.
Sure.
It's just that you know, they've had, one of my schools is in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had the ability to build the other way,
mm-hmm.
They'd do it in a heartbeat,
mm-hmm.
Because the price tag of having to relocate the school would go down by half. But the river's on the other side that's
sure.
eroding. You know, it's those kinds of situations.
Representative Jewell, through the chair, there, I believe at the NOAATAC airport,
right.
Yeah, there's actually, we have a map of it where it shows one of the schools kind of making a triangle cut in, and that's not too far in, and that's where DOT was willing to say, obviously, behind you, you've got a river, and in front of you, you've got a runway, so we are able to cut them in and give them that. So we try and make concessions wherever we can and help out, and certainly we'll help find them another piece of property, but this bill isn't asking to take anything back. They can stay.
Right.
So.
Understand that.
Sure.
Noted. Did you want Pat Lewis to answer? She is on.
If she has anything to add to that, sure.
Ms. Lewis?
Thank you. I'm sorry. I was just now unmuted, so I couldn't contribute earlier. And thank you, Representative Jewell. One of the things that I wanted to make clear was that what Nona said is absolutely right. We are not seeking to remove schools from airport property at this, you know, where they have been, where they will continue to be. Primarily what this bill will do is let the FAA know that the DOT has title to that land, and that's our primary assurance to the FAA that gives us our funding. Not trying to dislocate schools with this particular bill. It's just primarily a cleanup statute.
And I understand that. I can't even think about a time where, you know, with any of these schools. But I'm just, you know, in cases where there may come a dispute, there's no process here for that to occur. That's my only issue. I'm not pointing to anything in particular. I'm just looking down the line where something may happen that I can't see right now.
Okay. Actually, I think there's more questions here than I had hoped for or had anticipated. Let me say that. So let's set this aside for now and let's take up the workers' comp bill. Senate Bill 130, and Commissioner, are you introducing the bill, or is Paul?
Hello, Mr. Chairman. We can speak to it and ask questions on the bill.
Okay. Hope somebody can. Mr. Lesenke?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lesenke and I will. Thank you. And I'm Greg O'Clary, the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and Mr. Lesenke, Mr. Paul F. Lesenke, is the Director of the Division of Workers' Comp.
Sir, what version do you want us to do be addressing here?
I believe, Mr. Chairman, we're dealing with version X. House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 130, Judiciary.
Okay. Okay, very good. Does everybody have version X?
I don't.
Preston Croft, you don't have version X?
No, I do. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Commissioner, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, you have before you a product of several months of work by two standing committees within your body. Generally speaking, I think the issues are fairly well known by the two committees, the first two committees of referral. In general terms, this is a bill that addresses certain issues within the workers' comp law in an attempt to address the problem of making the system more efficient and also dealing with the runaway rate increases that employers have experienced over the last several years. One of the key issues I think that you may be concerned with, or at least interested in, is the legislative task force that's found in the bill. And Paul, if you'll help me, as this bill has gone through several versions, the commissioner,
section 71 of the
on page
13. No, it's not. Yes. Sorry. It's on page 31. It begins on page 30 and carries over to page 31.
Okay.
Section 65.
Section 65 deals with the task force on workers' compensation. The particular approach that
do you want a motion to adopt that, if he's going to refer to it?
I don't think we need it. That's the version that's going to be forwarded to us.
Thank you, okay. Sir.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The concept behind the legislative task force, frankly, is one that I think in the Senate bill that came across, Senate Bill 130, Judiciary Chairman in that body felt that this particular issue in body of law requires major surgery at some point, but you have not had the time, or shall we say, it hasn't been convenient to deal with it in one session. This is the second session in which we've dealt with it. Therefore, in order for the legislature to be more involved, they have inserted the provision in the bill that sets forth a legislative task force. Generally, the bill, as I say, is a compilation of various interests that have come with somewhat of a general package. We would ask you to advance the bill during this session if possible. It will answer questions on the bill if you have them.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions? Maybe, Commissioner, you can brief us on this has been through a couple committees, I think, fairly quickly, rapidly. What was the biggest change in the Section 65? Is that?
Well, the only reason I point that out to you is because I think it has, Mr. Chairman, plenty of across-the-board interest with respect to the legislative branch. If I were, I would really take too much of your time if I went through the various changes. And to be honest with you, this is not the administration's draft bill. This is a committee substitute to the bill that came from the other body. One of the main things in this bill that you do not find in the original Senate Bill 130 that came across is there is no controversial appeals commission.
Very good. Any questions?
Just out of curiosity, and how critical is that to getting the support for the bill and the final analysis from the parties?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelly, it's difficult for me to speak to that because we see the final product that the body itself in this chamber addresses, it'll be difficult for us to make those determinations, sir. Obviously, the administration was interested in trying to, reduce the time it takes to get a adjudication appeal on a controverted claim resolved. That's why we advanced the idea of the appeals commission within the department and within the division. There were certainly a lot of rhetoric about that particular approach, and it is a controversial issue, and that's why I want to point it out to you. The commission itself is not in this CS document you have in front of you.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow on, where did that one come out?
In the House Labor and Commerce, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Any other questions? Okay. No one could testify that I know of. Representative Foster. Let's move it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. How long does committee members want to go here? Do you care?
If you want to finish up that bill, I got no more questions. I want to offer my amendment.
I'll go back to that one. Okay, let's pick up the children. I have no idea if you're here for that. And you're here for Representative Hyson. Is that the same one the commissioner here? Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Just give us a second here, guys. Adjust.
Bill, all right. That was the best one.
So that's why I didn't ask him. I asked you. We're back, and we have Senator Jason, the Senator Dyson's office. Jason, I hope you'll pass on to the good senator that we are here in Senate bills.
Good.
Yeah. Okay, Jason, for the record, tell us who you are and who you're affiliated with, and then a little bit something about the...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason Hooley, Office of Senator Dyson. And Senate Bill 150 is a Senate Hess Committee bill. And I'll be real quick about its explanation. The Alaska Children's Trust was created in the late 1980s to provide startup funding to community-based organizations that combat child abuse and neglect. And the grants that the trustees award are determined by a formula that's set in statute. And the Board of Trustees is requesting additional flexibility in the administration of the program, and SB 150 attempts to provide that by adjusting the funding formula. This proposal removes the $50,000 annual cap on grant awards and refines the funding formula percentages. It effectively sets up a four-year limit on grant awards in order to reinforce the original intent of the program as providing seed money to these community organizations. For the same purpose, the bill also sets up a requirement that applicants submit a sustainability plan in their proposal. And finally, the bill also gives the board the authority to reduce or eliminate grants in order to enforce program requirements or performance goals. Commissioner Gilbertson is here, and he is a trustee on the board. And one of the problems that they will admit is the fact that the trust has not been able to award any new grants over the past several years. The current funding formula allows grantees to continue to receive funding indefinitely. And in fact, the earnings from the trust that the board distributes have been entirely devoted to maintain recurring grant awards. And without considering the efficacy of individual programs, that prevents the trust from investing in new and innovative programs.
Okay. That's all. Very good. Thank you, Jason. Question?
Yes. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I guess at the risk of finding out who's going to be mad about maybe changing this, who are the grant recipients and who would be affected?
Commissioner, you want to go?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Joel Gilbertson, Commissioner of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. The trustees of the trust I'll answer your question, Representative Stoltz. The trustees actually voted it and asked the department to introduce, and the governor introduced this legislation on their behalf, and they wanted to be the ones testifying, and thus far they've testified at every hearing. and we've been along to help them along the way, but none of them are available for this hearing tonight, so I'm sitting in for them. But previously, the chairperson, Margo McCabe, has been doing this testifying, and I just wanted to listen that they are involved in this legislation. They haven't been available. I actually have a list. I don't know if it's easier to copy it for the committee members, or I can read it off.
Rattle them off.
Bartlett Regional Hospital, Center for Community in Sitka, City of Saxman, Covenant House in Anchorage, Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption, Fairbanks Resource Agency in Fairbanks, Homer Children's Services in Homer, Hoonah City Schools in Hoonah, Juneau Family Birth Center in Juneau, REACH here in Juneau, Resource Center for Parents and Children in Fairbanks, Sutton Elementary School in Sutton, Talkeetna Elementary School in Talkeetna, Tundra Women's Coalition in Bethel, I hope I didn't miss one, but there's CBU and Seward, sort of all over the state. If they apply, well, Mr. Chairman, as Jason stated, the reason the trustees asked the governor to put this legislation forward for them is that the Children's Trust, when it was established, has been set up where the grants are made out of the earnings that come from the fund. And there, none of the corpus is spent at any time. And it actually has a fairly conservative investment strategy. The earnings have been relatively flat for the past few years. And as a result, the grant making that the trust has done has been relatively flat. And it's actually been fairly stable for a number of years. We do about $220,000 to $240,000 of grant making for the Children's Trust each year. These are pretty small grants, and they go out for child abuse and neglect programs across the state. The original fund was established by statute. Funds were deposited. It raises a little bit more money. They do a charity golf tournament each year in Anchorage. They sell little license plates you'll sometimes see in the state. We sell some heirloom birth certificates and marriage certificates to raise some money for the Children's Trust. And largely the philanthropic community donates most of the money that comes into it. As a result of the flat amount of money and the fact that currently there is no there's no cap on the number of years that grantees can continue to receive funds, the trust actually hasn't awarded a new grant in just about 3 years. And we've just been doing recurring grants. And they're good programs. I think the trustees will say they're good programs as well. One of the things that they did want to move towards, though, is sort of more of the model like the Mental Trust uses, where there's a desire to work with grantees at the initial stage on the application, develop sustainability plans so that the trust is not relied upon as the continued source of funding for a long period of time, and then over a four-year period and a four-year relationship with that organization, build them up with the grant funding and then transition them off where they become self-sufficient. And that natural turnover, then, of the grantees allows the trust to do new grant making. Absent this legislation passing for the third straight year this summer, we will not put out any new grants from the Children's Trust. And that's what brought this legislation before you.
Okay, very good. Follow-up question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if somebody wanted to donate a large amount of money that they wanted, they want this only for child abuse specifically, say $1 million, and they want it, but just with this... and we give it to the trust, you know, would this legislation prevent that? We'd have to make those people go to different entities,
Response to the Chairperson Stoltz, we don't get $1 million.
That's
smaller dollar amounts. Either any dollar amount, sure. Individuals can contribute directly to the trust. That money is deposited into the sort of the corpus of the fund, and then under statute, we donate those monies through the earnings. And then the trustees make the decisions on the grants. They work, they put out the RFPs, they review them. It's citizens from across the state. They review those and they make the recommendations and awards. And so it's been very effective. It's a small amount of money for a large challenge. It's hard to fight child abuse and neglect in the state with $200,000. But I think they do what they can do, and they've done a wonderful job.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. The testimony and the memos are about how this is all about making it easier in some ways, take down some sidebars and giving grants. I do want to be on the record fully with you because I think that's one of the great problems we've got in the department. We don't have enough sidebars on issuing grants. They have a tendency, as you well know, to become entitlement programs. You don't, the testimony out of the department relating to certain grant divisions, the grant management system is anachronistic. still have that gentleman chained up in the basement somewhere. But I'm troubled by lowering down our sidebars on these things. I mean, we've had testimony that all you have to do to, once you get your grant from the department, you just keep Xeroxing the application every year and they send you money. No follow-up, no performance measurements, no benchmarking on actually achieving the mission of the department. I'm being asked here to go on good faith that, hey, you know, take down the sidebars and we're going to go forward and do good things with state money. I really, really have a problem. This, to me, is an anti-accountability bill. I just want, can you give me any assurance that there's accountability going on here?
Respond to the chair, Representative Faulkner. I think this bill does the exact opposite of what you may believe it does. This bill ends what currently exists, which is the grants continuing on forever. This statute will now cap that grants cannot continue past 4 years. It also states that the grants step down in a structured formula over those 4 years. It states that now applicants, upon applying, have to have a sustainability and self-sufficiency plan that must be integrated into the RFP process. And it also states that that performance measures and objective criteria can be used to discontinue grants that aren't meeting those performance standards. So this legislation was designed to give greater authority to the trustees to do, I think, what you're asking them to do.
I'm wondering then, maybe, what about language that now that the board may not award grants, we may not renew grants either. The idea is these are one-time things. Bootstrap grants get things going, and then they got to be on their own. They've got to prove sustainability. I can't think of a better way of saying that. You get 1 4-year shot at this, and then you're out.
Responding to the chair, Representative Faulkner, the first section deals with what is required for the grant for the trust to award a grant. What you see is 1 through 4 existing language for the trust, and what we're adding is a fifth section which talks about having that sustainability and self-sufficiency embedded into it at the early stage. I think the trust does have that authority and does have the authority to not award grants. This also extends authority for us to discontinue the grants if they're not meeting performance measures and outcome-based criteria. Section 3.
I appreciate that discussion because I had sort of the exact opposite impression I was doing. In one way, it is removing a it's establishing a lot of new sideboards, but in one way, it's removing sideboard that $50,000 cap. And given that you only have $200,000, why wouldn't retaining that be a good idea to sort of force some spreading, at least around the state, or certainly more grants?
Respond to the chair, Representative Croft. I think it's fair to say that currently, with the current fiscal challenge of the trust, that whether or not we have a $50,000 cap or not, we're not in a fiscal situation where we can award $50,000 grants. That said, the trust has actually received federal funding through the Children's Trust. This year, the trust received $600,000 to administer.
And it goes under these rules. I'm sorry, when we have federal money that they're administering, it's governed by these as well, or governed by federal?
It's governed by these rules. The fund dollars are being managed by the trust. We, as a result of the challenge that was placed by the current statute, the federal money was instead directed to the department this current year, because the funds were granted to the Children's Trust to conduct a statewide media campaign, social marketing campaign, and that's what the trustees want to talk about if they were here. They've been working on a social marketing campaign. Social marketing is much like any other media campaign. It'll be advertising and some other things. However, it's instead of saying, you know, don't abuse your child, the campaign's more designed like if your child's crying, this is what you should do. It's a social marketing campaign, working with some existing media tools that are out there. $600,000 was directed from the federal government to the Children's Trust to conduct a social marketing campaign. Because of this current statutory challenge, we weren't able to administer that sizable amount of money because you couldn't administer a statewide media campaign working under the existing cap. We'd have to divide the project up into 8 different pieces to fit under the cap. The federal agency instead directed the money directly to the department, and the department is allowing the trustees to shape it and run it, but really it's being run through the department. So this language was designed so that in the future, and actually there's another $600,000 coming in the existing budget that hasn't yet been released to the trust, would allow the trust to actually run that money for the first time for themselves. And that's what created that language.
Okay. Any other questions? Is there any
Are there any other questions?
No amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I move that CS for House Bill 150 pass be requested out of the committee with a fiscal note and reflecting the individual recommendation of the esteemed membership of this committee.
Oh, exactly.
Wow.
Oh, pretty
great.
Wow. Wow.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chairman.
Any objections? Seeing
none, bill passes the committee. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I think what we'll do, Amy, we weren't sure you were going to make it, and you probably weren't sure we were going to continue on. So let's go on to House Bill 208, Veterans Cemetery. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg, what's the status? Is there a companion Senate bill on this?
There is a companion Senate bill. Senator Huggins, if I guess I can say that in this room, has a...
Yeah, the
body's Huggins. Yeah, the body's Huggins. We're not doing Huggins.
Okay.
We're here.
Very good. For the record.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
For the record, just tell us who you are. And maybe you already did.
Who I am? Who am I? At this time in the day, I guess... I'm Representative David Guttenberg, House District 8. Last year, a woman came to me asking me about seeing to establish a vet cemetery in Fairbanks. Little did her husband had died, and that was one of his wishes. He was a retired Marine and longtime Fairbanks. And little did she know that he was a friend, acquaintance of mine. He was a retired Marine that chowed down on a big fat cigar and dispatched me from the laborers hall for the first time in 1974. So my staff went to work on researching it, figuring out what we can do. It seems that in the state of Alaska, there's two federal veteran cemetery in Anchorage at Richardson and in Sitka. The state doesn't qualify for another one, but it does qualify to have a state cemetery, which the federal VA authority program would fund up to 100% of its development costs. So with this bill, it allows us the VA to go ahead and look and seek to establish that. There were two amendments in military veterans affairs that I thought made the bill stronger and were very good. And the first one is on page 2, line 2. It added both of the Veterans Cemetery Fund and also other programs benefiting veterans. That was from the library, not the library, but the license plate, the statute. And down on page line 22 of page 2, the department shall establish and maintain a veteran cemetery in Fairbanks, and then was added and elsewhere in the state to serve state veterans. Because in case at some point in the future there's another one that would be eligible, it would already be in statute. We don't seek to change any authority or any requirements or eligibility that the feds have. We're fitting into all of their statutes and requirements as far as the cemeteries go. There's really no fiscal note until actually something happens, which we don't even know if it will be established. It allows them to do it.
Okay. Sure. Question? Yes, Representative Hoffman.
Perfect timing. Perfect segue from a question. You just said we're not, great idea. We're not sure if they'll do it, but it's a great thing to look into doing.
Yes.
Would it not be then? Is that not inconsistent with line 21 on page 2, where it talks about the Alaska Veterans Cemeteries, and it says that the department shall do this? It seems to give them an affirmative mandate that says thou shalt do it or else. Is that inconsistent with the intent? And I'm not trying to denigrate the project, but I'm just wondering, ought that be permissive? The department may do this?
Through the chair, but I imagine in setting up a cemetery, there's a lot of restrictions. You know, when people talk to me about, you know, the prospective costs, you know, can you, because the VA does do grants to setting it up and what those are going to cost and the cost of maintaining it. I imagine just as there would be in that where it would be built or could it be built or if there's land available that's appropriate, you know, they shall do it. Might be they might be trying to do it for a long time and never get to it.
Okay. I guess just Mr. Chair, I guess that word does trouble me because again, I'm considering, despite the appearance that this legislature seems to have adopted this year, that there are no more fiscal challenges facing the state and that money grows on trees. You know, I think it'd be a great idea to give them the authority to pursue jurors, but I've also some other dealings with the state of late that when they come up and tell me what shall means that you can't get through this. I mean, it's a roadblock. We must do this. And we would be putting ourselves on the hook for potentially a really unanticipated consequence or putting the department in a position that they could be sued by someone that said, you didn't do this for me. As I look to my counselors here for counsel on this.
We want to say shall maintain, because that is the habit they need to maintain. I'm not sure when you say shall establish in Fairbanks and elsewhere, I mean, the elsewhere, I guess, I don't know, it's a very laudable program idea. It may be shall maintain and may establish wherever they want in Fairbanks and elsewhere. That makes more sense. I want to keep the mandate to maintain it, as I guess I'll know.
Okay, so Representative, you can ponder that a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm real involved with the Veterans Advisory Committee. I attend their meetings every year. They seem to have a pretty good process. They're involved in administering or providing grant money and passing it through to veterans groups for upkeep to cemeteries. Shouldn't the Veterans Advisory Committee be the one that's, instead of us saying where the next cemetery should be and somewhere in the interior and elsewhere, shouldn't that Veterans Advisory Committee that's been tasked with speaking for veterans and probably distinguished group of people. You have one from your district, Bob Murray, who I've known for years, folks from Anchorage, folks from Southeast, men and women, all different, representing all the different conflicts and wars throughout. I'd like to have their guidance because they interface with folks in the American Legions and veterans groups and comment.
Oh, sure. There's really only one place that, according to the VA, that there is that's eligible for getting funding from the VA for a state, and it's based upon a population. And if you go out from so far from that population, I think it's 40 miles. We talked about. Nanana, which is where the Murrays kind of live, if it's the same Murrays that we're talking about.
Anderson,
yeah. Through the chair. Yeah, the VA has requirements, and I don't have the exact verbiage here on what it is, but it's a population of so many vets, and you can only go so far. And I know Nanana has a cemetery that they bury everybody for free, but it doesn't go that far. And if the VA says you can go this far from this population, so that's as far as you could go. I don't have any place that I want it necessarily. You know, whether a plot of land or one side of town. I haven't even had that dialogue with anybody except to say that just so long as it meets the VA's requirements of where it is, wherever that is.
Okay, I think since we'll be getting the Senate bill on this soon, you said tomorrow?
I think it's not out of the Senate. It's from what I understand, it's waiting for a finance referral. It hasn't been scheduled in finance.
Okay. Pass
this one.
Pass
this one.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Warwick.
I guess, to me, when I read that, it sort of piqued my mind to read this, that this is mandatory. The department is going to have to establish these cemeteries, and it's going to have to establish them in Fairbanks, and I'm not sure why that community is singled out as opposed to Soldotna or Nikiski or Kenai or Matsu or some other place. Why would it be up to a determination based on some input from an advisory panel where a cemetery would go? Because right now I think that the state would be subject to an injunction to establish it because it is mandatory. Now the appropriations are discretionary. It would have to be set aside as a mandatory function of law. And in Fairbanks and elsewhere, there's no input as to where. It's loosely loosely defined.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The VA gives a benefit for burying the dead. It's $300 a veteran. They also give a grant of up to 100%, and it's based upon their qualifications and their criteria. I'm not trying to move that around to decide what that is. There's already one in Anchorage. There's one in Sitka. What they have told us is the only place that qualifies for this program is the interior because of the high vet population and the population center.
Any other questions?
Question. Well, only assuming that it's getting late and there's a lot of, it may be even later than we thought in terms of when we adjourn. I'd like to see something like this pass. I thought the Senate bill was farther along than we were covering for the Senate, but if it's slowing down, I'd love to get it. I'm sure we can work on that language between here and the floor. We know what we want to do.
Yeah, well, why don't you just set the subcommittee to check the status of the
sure.
other one? Because what I was thinking was the other one's going to come to us and get referred to finance anyway, and we just merge or marry yours with the set one. But if it's,
there
was just put it on.
Okay.
Can we set this site now?
Sure.
All right. Okay. Let's go ahead and go back to Senate Bill 152. We had some questions there. Representative Jewell, I believe you had some.
I'm okay.
You're okay? Can we vote on that?
This is just go.
All right. Questions on it over here?
I think I figured out what my concern was with is that one more time, we're being pushed around by federal regulations. And in this case, we're just capitulating to them. We're not providing any language here that says you shall make your best effort to fund an alternate, an approach, seek a change in federal regulation. In this case, we're simply setting all the schools. We're just going to get your roll over to urban beds. And needless to say, we've got the same problem elsewhere. That's a number of other problems here. I just really troubles me that we don't establish and we don't pursue our state primacy rather than just capitulating to a federal regulatory process. With that, I think it's a very short-sighted approach, but if that's the approach that we choose to take, that would be the approach, the policies that we establish.
Representative Hawker, through the chair, if I remember correctly from previous testimony from Kip Knudsen, our Deputy Commissioner of Aviation, in reference to, say, for instance, Sinuatak Airport, there's actual housing on the airport in the BRL. We're not asking, we're just saying you can't have title to the land. That's all. They're there now. There's a school there. There's housing. There's another facility. There's a gas tank. So what we're saying is we just need that title. We're not asking for anything else. If we just need to be able to tell the FAA we've got title to the land, so we're not having to give back federal grant monies. when we were in House CRNA, Representative Newman actually held the bill to check with the communities at the airports we've named where this is could be a problem. He contacted them. He came back with his findings and said none of these schools have a problem with it, or the REAA school district doesn't have a problem with it. So.
Okay. Any other questions? Amendments? I guess you're going to save your instructions, Bill.
Thank you.
I'd like to associate myself with Representative Parker's comments.
Okay. I want to do a chit sheet before this gets to the floor. Yeah. Representative Foster?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move out SB 142 out of committee. The attachments come out for the individual recommendation.
Any objections? Seeing none, Bill passes to you.
I did want to say, you know, a lot of these are tough problems, but let's take Catalina, for example. There's a wrecked cargo aircraft sitting at the end of the runway. And it's just like Shishimap, it's built on a sand spit, the whole village. And so there's no other place you can put the runway except at the edge of the village, which is on a sand spit. So if you're coming in for an approach over the village and you lose an engine, you're going to wipe out the whole village. Or let's say you're landing the other way toward the village, and your brakes broke, which is what happened to that tanker.
Yeah.
A DC-6. So he ground looped at the end of the runway to avoid from wiping out the whole town. You know, and what's at the end of the runway? The school.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just no other place to put the runway. And that's pretty common. Okay.
Well, that's, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Observation.
Very good. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Graff, appreciate the committee members staying around. I don't hear any bells, so we'll take up
to the Representative Holmes' favorite department, DEC.
Oh,
your favorite.
You can introduce the bill and tell us. Hold on just a second.
Well, I just think, in talking to the sponsor on the Veterans Bill, he'd be fine, I'd be fine to change shall to may, and then I think that was the only objection made to it. If you want to do that before, it'd be relatively easy to do.
Okay, and I want to check the status on what the Senate bill is, and then we'll address that after this next bill.
Thank you, sponsor.
I'm sorry?
I apologize. Comment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Yeah, 144.
For the record, my name is Amy Seitz, staff to Senator Wagner, who would have loved to have been here, but he's stuck in another meeting. So I get the pleasure.
We appreciate it.
Senate Bill 144 is pretty much just a cleanup bill. Back in 2003, the legislature passed House Bill 160 that... The purpose of that bill was to streamline Alaska's air permitting process by aligning the state's rules and statutes with the federal requirements. But then DEC went through and was adopting regulations based on the statute changes, and they found that in several places the statutes didn't meet the federal requirements. So basically what Senate Bill 144 does is clean up those definitions and stuff. So the state doesn't jeopardize its privacy over the air permitting process. Along with the definition changes, it does have one other part in there dealing with the permit fees that the air permitting division collects. Right now, the air permitting division is funded totally by the fees, and Senate Bill 144 allows the DEC to revoke a minor permit if the fees are not paid. So that's the gist of the bill, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions. John Kuderbach should be here any minute if there are technical questions that I can't answer. But
any questions?
How about an observation?
Oh,
seeing how we have time, Mr. Chair. You know, Representative Hocker was talking earlier about how we capitulate to the federal government. Well, I can assure you that this is the most onerous group of folks that you ever imagined. Does anybody remember MTBE? The feds have claimed that they will take away our federal funding. They've done it to the borough. They've done this constantly. If we don't roll over and rub our bellies so that we get the federal funds. In the city of Fairbanks, we've done this, and it's cost us millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars trying to comply with the feds. And luckily, we haven't had any 50 or 60 degree below zero weather. Because if we had that and we had the ice fog, guess what would happen? They'd classify us as a non-attainment area again. And guess what happens then? We have to jump through all these hoops that cost us millions and millions and millions of dollars. We spent in one area alone for a high school, we spent $750,000 to put in plug-ins. The high school, because the kids would sit up in the high school. They have the monitors in Fairbanks. They put all the monitors right downtown, and they put them right next to the busiest intersections. If you go to Los Angeles, they don't do that. The monitors aren't downtown Los Angeles. They're way out on the highways, and they're in different places so they can attain their specific carbon monoxide level of emissions. So I just have nothing but the greatest respect for the emissions control people, the EPA. So, that's all I got to say.
Then you really need to represent the voting more.
Mr. Chairman?
What we need is more regulation.
Representative Stoll.
I just like my friend from Fairbanks to save some of his wrath and anger for the DOT when we get some of these mandatory seatbelt bills up coming up soon.
I'm with you.
Okay.
Mr. Kudabaugh, you're here. You got any comments or anybody else have any questions? John is with the Division of Air Quality in Hereford.
Thank
Good
you.
Evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. That's all right. Quite all right. I really don't have any additional testimony to provide up here to answer any questions you have on the bill.
Steve Mulder, are you all right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Steve Mulder with the Department of Law here, available to answer questions as well.
Okay. Are there any questions? I don't see any questions, Steve. I guess stay at home and enjoy your evening, or go home and enjoy your evening.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions, thoughts, or concerns? Seeing none, Representative Foster. Any objections? Seeing none, Senate Bill 144 moves out of finance.
Thank you.
Okay. What did we have left?
Sit. Wait, did you do two?
Do what?
Okay, well, I guess they're checking on the status of the House Bill 208 or the other body's bill, whatever.
I just talked to Chairman Meyer, who said that it's in the same sense. It's pending. It's in Senate Finance and waiting to be heard sometime soon, but it hasn't been heard in Senate Finance. So if you don't have any objection, I'd like to move Sheldon May, and we can just keep it.
Is that the only amendment that anybody's looked at?
Representative Stoltz has another amendment, and I believe he's also got some other concerns.
Oh. Well, then never mind.
Okay, well, I think we'll just hold it. We'll hold it till tomorrow and see if we can't get that stuff. Representative Stoltz, did you have questions or concerns or some amendments to do to House Bill 208?
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, well, for the record, we'll take up House Bill 208. We've already had testimony. We've heard from the sponsor. It's back before us, Representative Stoltz.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move an amendment, except I'll verbalize it if it's necessary, because I don't have it. It's fairly simple. On page 2, line 21, it's changing the shall to may. And then on page 2, line 28, after shall, proper shall, put in the text, in consultation with the Alaska Veterans Advisory Council.
You want to repeat that one more time so everybody knows?
All right. On page 2, line 21, on subsection A, after the department, substitute shall with may. And then on line 28, the same page, in subsection C, after the department shall, in consultation with the Alaska Veterans Advisory Council.
Does everybody understand the amendment? Are there any objections to the amendment? Seeing none, we'll adopt the amendment. We'll call that amendment number 1. Are there any other questions, concerns, or amendments? Seeing none, Representative Foster.
Go ahead and move out AK 208. Health Committee has amended for the
any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 208 has moved out of committee. We've got two sheets to sign. Let's see, schedule for tomorrow. We're scheduled to meet at 2 p.m. We'll take up HB 100 State Virology Laboratory, SB 124 Fisheries Business License Bond.
What number? SB what?
124. SB 153 International Airport Revenue Bonds, pending referral. SB 102 Coastal Management Programs, pending referral. And SB 125 Licensing Medical or Care Facilities. And bills previously scheduled, ordered. With that, thanks for hanging around. I don't know when we're going to session, but we're at ease and...